You are listening to Sheep Might Fly, a podcast of serialized fiction written and read by Tansy Bain Roberts. This is Did We Break the End of the World from Defying Doomsday, Part 3. Aisha and Jin sleep in shifts. They don't trust this kid yet, and they've got too much to lose. Jin lets the torch go out, but keeps his aids on while he takes watch. His ears are aching already. Aisha curls up practically under him, using her pack as a pillow. He's pretty sure that Billy doesn't sleep at all. They slouch in the darkness, keeping each other company from opposite sides of the room. When it's Jin's turn to sleep, Aisha climbs on top of him, like he's more comfortable than the damned couch. And he finally takes the aids out and tucks them away in his pack. Enough talking, enough noise. Jin sacks out until daylight. When he wakes up, he stares at the ceiling and reads the words, "Did we break the end of the world?" scrawled across the ceiling. They went there before. The air smells of freshly sprayed paint. Aisha is asleep, damn her. Sprawled on top of Jin like a cat. Jin pushes her off, dodging her half-hearted attempt to pull a knife on him. She's never at her best in the mornings. Billy's in the kitchen, going through the drawers. He glances up at Jin and mutters something half into his chest, so no chance of lip reading. Jin touches his ears and makes a flicking motion to show he's running on silence. Billy holds up a wadded handful of plastic bags with a questioning expression. "Not bad," says Jin aloud. He can't control the volume when he talks, but it's not like he's trying to impress anyone. "Plastic's useful. And lightweight. You're better off taking them than leaving them behind." What he doesn't say? The really good scavengers, like he and Aisha, they care about their specialty. They know it inside and out. They're romantic about it. It becomes part of their identity. And it certainly helps build a reputation with the other traders. No one ever falls in love with plastic bags. Billy nods and keeps digging. "So you're an artist," says Jin, and takes some satisfaction from the way Billy rockets back on his heels, practically slamming his head on the underside of the sink. The words, and he makes the sign, break, though Billy won't know what he means. "Did we break the end of the world?" Billy just stares at him, crouched there on the floor of the wrecked kitchen like he's expecting to be hit or laughed at. Aisha interrupts their moment, stomping in with a musty towel from one of the cupboards. She hurls it at Billy's head, then follows it up with a bar of soap from her personal collection. Billy gapes as Aisha turns around and leaves the room again. "She must like you," Jin observes. "She's not usually that subtle." Picking which house is the right one to scavenge, that's a kind of magic. Aisha has a feel for these things, so Jin usually lets her take point. They're getting close to the new market site, so it's likely they're going to run into other scavengers over the next few days. Gangs or trading teams or indies or all of the above. This is a small cul-de-sac, with no sign of life, but that doesn't mean it's safe. Aisha doesn't make a move. She looks straight at Billy, waiting for him to pick a house for them. Billy isn't confident, but he points, and Aisha strides towards the weatherboard with its peeling gum-green roof, like she's the one who chose it. They do a walk around, noting exits and potential hazards. Then Aisha approaches the back door. It's locked, which hasn't happened in weeks. Either no one who ever turned the place over used this door, or this is that rarest of commodities, a house no one has broken into since the Pulse. Aisha employs her rarely needed lock-picking skills to get them inside. There's something wrong. Jin knows it before they've even got past the small laundry at the back. When he sees what's in the kitchen, his limbs go all numb and prickly in shock. It's a foster mother. He hasn't seen one in months. Usually when they turn up, it's in scrap heaps or lying naked out on front lawns, like so much refuse. Not like this. Not perfectly made up and dressed, frozen in the act of making a cup of coffee. There's a fruit bowl full of gross mush on the counter, and the remains of a sandwich after mice and ants got to it. She's standing right there, like that's what she was doing when the world ended. Billy's mouth shapes the words, "Oh, wow." Aisha leans in, fascinated by the still figure. Jin can't stay here. He can't be in this house, not with her standing there, perfect and lifeless, like all it would take is a fucking battery to get her moving again. He shoves his way out blindly, collapses on the back steps and sucks in slow breaths until he can feel his heartbeat settling back to something like normal. She reminds him of Greta, Jin's own foster mother. The hippie chic clothes and the thick-rimmed glasses, that's how she used to dress. It's like someone assembled a new Greta from a vague description and placed her in that kitchen for Jin to find. Everyone acts like it was always this way. A world full of suburbs to scavenge and teenage gangs and trading. But Jin's thoughts are never far from the world of 10 months ago. The world of foster mothers and school and computers and TV and hearing aid batteries. You don't have to fucking ration because you can buy new ones from the shop any time you like. Jin wants that world back, and he feels stupid and weak even for admitting it to himself. He's been doing fine. He's great at end of the world shit. He's a top-rate scavenger. He and Aisha are the best indie team in the business. But the memory of having Greta to look after him, to make dinner or nag him about his homework or drive him to the doctor, it's too much. It's a hurting hole in his chest. It's a long time before Aisha and Billy come out to find him. They sit on the steps, one on either side of Jin, shoulders jostling against his. It's nice. As close to family as he's ever going to get. Is it weird how quickly Billy got included in that? Aisha cradles her palm around her fist to make a ball that means precious, but is also the name sign that Greta gave him on the first day he was assigned to her as a foster kid. It's Jin's earliest memory. Aisha lays her head on his shoulder and nudges him to look towards Billy, who makes an awkward attempt at his own signs. We, move, woman. He looks awkward about the last sign choice, but Jin is glad he didn't go for mother instead, or rather, that Aisha didn't, because there's no way Billy knew those signs off the top of his head. She must have spent more time teaching him those signs than shoving the foster mother into a cupboard or whatever it is they did to get her out of sight. Jin signs, okay, back to them both. And then they sit there together for a while longer. Finally, Billy says, challenge? Raising his eyebrows to show it's a question, and Jin can't help smiling. He's pleased that their new teammate has gone to the trouble of starting to learn how to sign. That must be why he feels warm all over. It's in no way because Aisha's insistence on bathing and clean clothes has revealed that Billy's pretty damn hot. Still, Jin doesn't feel like scavenging, not with that foster mother and her inert plastic body hidden somewhere in the house. You go ahead, he says aloud, and tries not to be too hurt that Billy and Aisha jump to their feet, ready to get started without him. Billy pretends he's not specialising. This is the third house they've done since he joined them, and he always grabs a few practical general items like tools or plastic. Still, Jin and Aisha both know that his eye is on art supplies. It's ridiculous to have a specialty that isn't about basic survival needs, but neither of them are going to tell him that. Not when the sight of a packet of permanent markers or a spray can of paint makes him so fucking happy. It's a long hour for Jin, sitting out on the steps alone while his team does their thing without him. Leaning against the back door, his pack at his feet so the solar cell can drink up rays. He feels the occasional vibration of a door slamming, or cupboards and drawers being shoved open. It's a nice afternoon. The backyard's full of birds and sunshine, and hey, why not take the day off? He's earned it. Sometime later, he's jolted awake when Aisha throws the back door open behind him. Cook, she signs impatiently. When Jin frowns at her in confusion, she points at his pack before signing it again. Oh, not cook, stove. One of the heaviest and most useful things he owns, other than the lead-acid car battery, is a battery-powered camping stove they found buried at the back of a shed a few months back. Nothing to cook, he says aloud, because what the hell is she on about? They ran out of anything but dry rations and power bars a month ago. Aisha raises one eyebrow and smirks. Okay, for real food, he's going to put up with the creepy foster mother house. In the kitchen, Jin and Aisha find Billy unpacking a larder full of honest-to-God canned goods, like the foster family of this house were preparing for, well, the end of the world. Holy fuck, says Jin. Billy turns around and gives him the most beautiful grin he's ever seen in his life. Oh, great, food and a heart attack. Just what he needs. Kiss the cook, Aisha signs, with a mischievous look on her face and just about kills herself laughing when Jin gives her the world's most mortified expression. Thanks for listening to Sheep Might Fly. You can sign up to my author newsletter for updates. Follow me on Twitter at TansyRR or at Sheep Might Fly. Find me on Facebook at TansyRR Books. And if you like this podcast, consider supporting me at Patreon, where you can receive all kinds of cool rewards, early ebooks, and exclusive stories for a small monthly pledge. I have a new project that's just launched, which, since you seem to like podcasts, I'm assuming you might be interested in. As a stretch goal for Mother of Invention, which is the science fiction book I'm editing that comes out next year. Anyway, we crowdfunded on Kickstarter, and as our stretch goal, one of the promises we made was for me to read the whole of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein as an episodic podcast, with a little rearrangement to the genders of the characters, but no other changes. I promise I am not mentally editing Mary Shelley as I read. Well, maybe a little bit, but, you know, I'm reading all her words, except for quite a few of the pronouns and gender-specific terms, and maybe a few of the names. So it's really fun. The first episode is up now. I'll put a link in the show notes to Frankentastic, my regendered reading of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. It's a classic book of the genre. This is a fun way to keep up with it. And if the gender stuff does your head in, I know of several listeners already who are actually reading the original chapter by chapter, along with listening to my gender-bent version. So I will link to that. And otherwise, I will see you next week for part 4 of Did We Break the End of the World? Thanks for listening.